I'm thankful that you've asked me to come and take part in this study. I want to express my gratitude, and I'm really honored and humbled to be before you today. This isn't my first preacher's study, but it's the first time I've been at this study, and I'm very thankful and grateful that you've decided to trust me with this topic this morning. I've been told last night that I have a hot topic. I was told that both sides might get inflamed, but I'd ask you to hold your fire for just a little while we discuss what is certain to be a debated topic. It's something that we'll probably have some discussion about in the Q&A. But I think when we unfold God's Word and we sincerely look at what's before us, I think we can come to a good conclusion on how God's Word teaches about cremation. In a world that grows more and more expensive to live, the question that is at the forefront of every Christian's mind is cremation okay to do? Is it okay for us to be cremated as Christians? CNN Money recently published a report, and the name of the report was called The High Cost of Saying Goodbye. And on this report, the authors told a story of a family that had saved and saved, and they'd put money towards their burial and their funeral costs, and eventually the person died, and there was still a huge bill at the end of it, and they ended up spending thousands and thousands of dollars to inter their loved one, even though they thought they had saved plenty. And that's the way it is with many funeral homes today. You put down your deposit, and you start paying these things off, and all of a sudden the costs just get higher and higher and higher and higher. So when you have a situation like that, in this same article, there was an individual mentioned that found a place to cremate them for a flat fee of $895. The average funeral cost today is well into the tens of thousands of dollars, but average is about $10,000 to have a funeral today with the burial and all of the works that go with it. So there's quite a significant price difference when you think about that. And I think Christians today have a real challenge before them in answering this question, because there might be biases that come up just because, well, we're frugal people. We don't like wasting our money on things that, I don't know, maybe many of us wouldn't consider this to be a waste necessarily, but having an exorbitant funeral is something I think that especially preachers need to consider, preachers of all people, since we, most of us, get our funds directly from a congregation somewhere, and we know that we're going to be actively spending the Lord's money in a certain way. Japan has one of the highest cremation rates in the world. They cremate 99.85% of their people. And that study came out in 2008, so those statistics may have changed some. But the idea that it's a uncommon practice in our world today is certainly not true. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 20 tells us that all go to one place, all are from dust, and all return to dust. So is this cremation process anything more than just accelerating what naturally is going to happen anyways? That's a question we'll address as we talk today. The topic we have before us is not a simple one to think about. It's not simple to talk about. And honestly, it brings me no comfort to talk about the time that my family is going to have to decide what they're going to do with my body. And I'm sure many of you are the same way. When you have a topic that can be so polarizing, I think it's difficult to tread. And I'm going to do my best here this morning to present three different viewpoints on cremation. And we can discuss in the question and answer session, hopefully, which will bring us to our best arrival. I've made my own conclusions about the matter. But I thought it was wise of me to present each of the viewpoints, because we're going to, like I said, we're going to tread this very carefully today and make sure that we're examining every possibility when we make our decision about this important subject. In my research, I found that cremation is not the only alternative way to dispose of human remains in this day and age. In fact, there are several ways to take care of the bodies of our loved ones, and we're going to go through a few of these briefly this morning. There's a process out there today called aquamation. Aquamation is very interesting. I didn't know this even existed until I got this study. So with aquamation, the individual body is placed into a clean stainless steel vessel, and with a combination of water flow and temperature and alkalinity, is used to accelerate the natural course of tissue hydrolysis. Typically, this process takes about 4 hours to complete. So when you think about different ways that we might be able to take care of our loved ones' remains, it's not just burial or cremation. There's all sorts of things out there, and aquamation is one that's beginning to lead the way with many of the Californian people who feel like this is a more green process to liquefy their loved ones. Very interesting. Mummification is also a way that people dealt with and took care of their loved ones. This process, many of us are familiar with, so we'll not spend a lot of time with it. You basically shut down the corpse's ability to have oxygen. Sometimes they're exposed to extreme cold or to very low humidity or lack of air places so that the corpse can be preserved. Cryonics is becoming more and more popular today. This is just the simple freezing of a corpse. When a human has died in America, I, in my studies, I found that you cannot be cryogenically frozen. You can't be processed in that way while you're still living. It doesn't matter if you've got a terminal illness or not. When it comes the time that you're ready to die, you go to the hospital and they prepare one of these chambers for you. And the moment that you die, that you're pronounced dead, then they'll go ahead and put you in this freezer. But this is done by some people today, very expensive process. And the idea is that someday in the future, they'll be able to find a cure for whatever illness has killed them. And they'll be unfrozen and, I guess, seek out trying to live life again. Entombment. This is very common. It's above ground, typically, usually shared in some sort of mausoleum or something like that. The entombment is the act of placing human remains in a structurally enclosed place or a burial chamber. And this differs in burial in that the body is not consigned directly to the earth. So rather, it's kept in a specially designed, sealed place, like a mausoleum. Exposure. I'm not going to post a picture for obvious reasons, but exposure is another way that people are left after they've passed away from this earth. Leaving the body to be consumed by the wild or to naturally decompose by the earth's elements is what this method of care for your loved one exemplifies. Finally, we come to the two most common forms of taking care of your loved one. Burial. You know, burial is the act of interring a person or object in the ground. And it's probably the simplest and the most common method of disposing of human remains today. Burial is generally accepted to be one of the earliest detectable forms of the religious world. Many people, even today, most burials are presided over by some sort of a religious figure. Christian burials, for example, they will place the body in a certain direction. Oftentimes in a Christian burial, the body is laid out flat with the arms and legs extended, aligned to the from east to west. So as with the head on the western end of the grave, so as they rise, they'll rise to the east. That's a Christian burial. But burial is not just practiced by Christians. In fact, in Islam, the dead that are buried are faced towards Mecca, so that they when they rise, they'll similarly rise towards what they believe is the appropriate direction. There were warriors in some ancient cultures that were actually buried upright. They were buried standing, and several have been buried upside down, usually in cases where people have committed suicide or they had some sort of humiliating death that was worthy of that sort of punishment. They would bury people upside down sometimes. One thing that's interesting to note about burial, humans aren't the only ones who bury their dead. Animals will bury their dead. Chimpanzees and elephants have been observed to cover bodies with some sort of leaf structure or something like that as a form or method of care for those that they loved. And in fact, there was one story that I read about where an elephant had actually trampled a mother and her child, a human mother and her child. And after that had happened, the elephant came back and covered those humans with some sort of straw and grass. Finally, we have cremation. I'm sorry, I'll throw one more in here. There's a rising popularity in dedicating one's body to science And what happens to the body beyond that, I'm not sure. But this is just another way that people have decided to care for their loved ones beyond this life. They'll dedicate their body to science and let science study whatever might have been the event that ended their life. Or sometimes they'll just allow their organs to be donated to science for different forms of study. But finally, our topic today, cremation. Cremation is the process of reducing dead bodies to basic chemical compounds in the form of gases and bone fragments. This is most often performed in a crematorium, although in some cultures, such as India, they do practice what's called open-air cremation, where the body is burned out in the open. Generally, temperatures of no less than 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit are required to ensure complete disintegration. And after that process is complete, the dry bone fragments that remain are swept out of the retort, which is the chamber that the body is kept in, and it's passed through what's called a cremulator. This machine that the bones are passed through sort of grinds the bones into a fine sand-like powder, and at the end you have the ashes and you have the ground-up bones that are passed into some sort of a vessel, an urn or something like that. Japanese and Thai traditions do not want the bones pulverized, so they don't use a cremulator. And there are places in America that also will not crush the bones if that's desired by the individual, if they'd rather bury the bones. That is an option at some places. However, there is a great deal of ceremony in foreign cultures with this idea of cremating somebody. They'll come back through. In Japan, they'll come through with some sort of a chopstick object, and they'll lovingly remove the bones from the ash. And there's a great deal of ceremony involved with this whole process in different places. So the urn's kept in a place of honor usually. It serves as almost a shrine sometimes in some families. Many cultures have variations of this process, but basically this gives us a general idea of what we're looking at. As one can see, there's a whole lot of options when it comes to how to care for a loved one after they've passed from this life, how to care for their remains. I've only mentioned some of the ways that are growing in popularity today, too. If I could give a whole study just on the different ways that bodies are taken care of. So rather than spend any more time on that, I've already spent a good 10 minutes of this time, so we need to get moving. I want to introduce our three viewpoints today. I almost did four, and I'll tell you about that in just a minute. View one, cremation is sinful. Christians should not destroy their body by choice with fire. View two, cremation is not sinful, but Christians still should not destroy their body by choice with fire. And view three, cremation is not sinful, and Christians can freely choose how their remains are returned to the dust of the earth. Those are the three viewpoints that I've chosen to list today. And I think it would be some form of radicalism to say that the fourth view had any weight in our brotherhood, to say that cremation is the only and right way that Christians should do things. I do think that we need to consider this this viewpoint, because there might be some folks out there today that are slowly subscribing to this idea just based on cost alone. You're talking about, especially, again, our preaching brethren, the cost that's involved with that. It could do a lot of good work, the cost that's involved with having a funeral for someone. Well, what I've done here this morning beyond this is I've listed all of our Bible verses that are going to be relevant. And we're going to go through these quickly. But that way we have the groundwork laid, and we can come back with each of these viewpoints, and we can reference how these verses might impact our views. So let's, without any further hesitation, let's go ahead and hop into it. Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, verse 6 and 7, teaches us that death is the separation of body and spirit when it says, "Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loose, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it." And we see two other verses that seemingly indicate that same concept. We oftentimes use James 2 as sort of a springboard in one direction, and I'm going to use it in the other. We here as Christians understand that faith without works is dead, so just as the body is without the spirit. We understand that concept very plainly and clearly, so it shouldn't be hard for us to recognize when the spirit departs the body is completely, it is it is what it is. It's just a body. It doesn't have life any longer. Amos chapter 6 and verse 10 teaches the idea that there is a certain amount of care that belongs to a loved one's remains. Exodus 13 and 19 also teaches this. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. So we understand today that there's a certain amount of care that every individual takes when they take care of their loved one. And the question that's before us is cremation truly caring for that individual? I think several people have issues getting past that idea. There were many in the Bible that had passed away and that were exposed without any care whatsoever. And that's a very important section of what we're going to talk about today. So I'd like to read a few of these passages for us. Deuteronomy 21st chapter verses 22 and 23 teaches, if a man guilty of a capital offense is put to death and his body is hung on a tree, you must not leave his body on the tree overnight. Be sure to bury him that same day, because anyone who is hung on a tree is under God's curse. You must not desecrate the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. 2 Kings 9. 36 and 37 says, they went back and told Jehu, who said, this is the word of the Lord that he spoke through his servant Elijah the Tishbite, on the plot of the ground at Jezreel, dogs will devour Jezebel's flesh. Jezebel's body will be like refuse on the ground in the plot at Jezreel, so that no one will be able to say, this is Jezebel. And finally, Jeremiah 22:19, he will have the burial of a donkey dragged away and thrown outside the gates of Jerusalem. There were many people in the Bible who died and were not given any other consideration or care after that. And it seemed always that that was a disgrace to those people. Moving on, we do find several instances of cremation throughout the scriptures, and there might be others, and I think that if we get to our question and answer session, and I've missed one, that you'll make me aware of that, but for our time's sake, at least today, we're just going to visit a few anyways. Amos 2 and 1 says, thus says the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab, and for four I will not revoke its punishment, because he burned the bones of the king of Edom to lime. Joshua 7, 25 and 26 says, and Joshua said, why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day. So all Israel stoned him with stones, and they burned him with fire after they had stoned him with stones. Then they raised over him a great heap of stones still there to this day. So the Lord turned from his fierceness of his anger. In 1 Samuel 31, 11 and 12, we find here that now when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose and walked all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, and they came to Jabesh and burned them there. They took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. As we continue, we find other instances of cremation. 2 Kings 23, we find Josiah there removing bones from the tombs of the wicked prophets and burning them. And we find that in two other passages in 2 Kings 23 and in 2 Chronicles 34, 5. So, here we have before us the verses that demonstrate some sort of cremation. But that's not the only time that bodies have been burned with fire. In fact, there were many living people that were burned, or at least threatened to be burned with fire. And we're going to look at a few of those examples as well today. Genesis 38, when Judah made his mistakes in his life and did the things that he did, he found his daughter-in-law Tamar pregnant, and he made the threat, bring her out here, let her be burned. He didn't realize it was his child that she was carrying, but that's all the same what he said. Leviticus 20 and 14 says, if there's a man who marries a woman and her mother, it is immorality. Both he and they shall be burned with fire, so that there will be no immorality in your midst. Leviticus 10 and 2, Nadab and Abihu, fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. We find in 1 Kings 14, something similar to that. Because of this, I'm going to bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. I will cut off from Jeroboam every last male in Israel, slave or free. I will burn up the house of Jeroboam as one burns dung until it's all gone. This might be more figurative than it's literal, but all the same, I wanted to include it. 2 Kings 21, we find soothsayers, with those who use witchcraft, and people making their children pass through fire. That was an awful time for Israel's history. And finally, 1 Corinthians 13 and 3, And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. As burning might denote something, again, more... it might be more of a picture than it is a real burning. It could have been talking about martyrdom. It could have been talking about self-immolation. It could have been just talking about enslavement. Regardless of what you think, I decided to include it. As we continue, we're going to just hit the high points on these because I think that they're all drawing the same point. When we think about the instructions that were being given here for people requesting burial or that were being buried, for time's sake today, we'll just read a few. Genesis 47:29-30 says, "When the time drew near for Israel to die, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, 'If I have found favor in your eyes, put your hand under my thigh and promise that you will show me kindness and faithfulness. Do not bury me in Egypt when I rest with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me where they are buried. I will do as you say,' he said." We have several examples of Israelites that were buried, and we have a few examples of Christians that were buried as well. And we're going to move through these rather quickly because there are many of them. We'll go ahead and read a few of the New Testament ones. John 11:38-43 teaches, "Jesus therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, 'Take ye the stone away.' Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, 'Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead for 4 days.' Jesus saith unto her, 'Said I not unto thee that if thou wast believed, thou shouldest see the glory of God?' Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, 'Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me.'" There's the instance of Lazarus being buried. Jesus was also buried. The Bible tells us in Matthew 27 that Joseph took his body, he wrapped it in clean linen cloth and placed it in a new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb and he went away. I really think I need to get through these. So we have a few other verses that I think we ought to consider. In each of these cases that we've spoken about, it doesn't matter whether they were left to exposure. It doesn't matter if they were cremated. It doesn't matter if they were buried. There's one verse that kind of stands above them all. And that's the verse that you see up there now. 1 Corinthians 15:51-52. "Listen, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed in a flash, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed." Today, the resurrection is unstoppable. Doesn't matter what you do with your body, the resurrection is going to come, whether you're wicked or not. And as I spoke to our brethren back home, they really applauded this remark, the idea that no matter what we do with our bodies, no matter how it ends for us, you're going to be raised. And that's an overarching point that I want to make sure is very clear today. There is nothing that you can do that will stop the resurrection. Doesn't matter if you're wicked or good, there's nothing you can do to stop it. So many people, I think, do use cremation to try and stop what God has said was going to happen. There are some religions out there that are trying to make that happen, but it's not possible. You're not going to stop the cremation no matter what you do. There's a couple other verses that I want to consider today. Genesis 18:27 is one of them. "Abraham answered and said, 'Indeed now I who am but dust and ashes have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord.'" This is interesting to me because of the verse that's used there, the word that's used there, the word ashes. It's interesting that Abraham chose this word to describe what our bodies basically come down to. The Hebrew word that's used there is the word aphir. And it's defined just ashes, or if you're using it in a figurative sense, worthlessness. It's used in Numbers 19:9, 2 Samuel 13:19, and Daniel 9:3. And there's several other places, but every time you read those passages, it's clear that ashes, the way that we think ashes, is being considered today. So this is one place where Abraham might have spoke a word that's important for our discussion today, ashes. Genesis 3:19 is another passage that we need to consider today. "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." Again, these things don't mean that we don't have a resurrection coming. So our bodies, though, are distinct from our spirit. And I think this is another passage that, this is the last passage we'll talk about, and then we'll move on. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who's in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Now, I realize that that was lengthy, and I apologize for the length of it. But what we have now before us, if you're able to write down many of those passages, is I think everything that we have, considering cremation, most of what we have on burial. So we've got the verses that lay before us now. So let's come back to our viewpoints and take a look at each one. First of all, we're going to look at view one. That's cremation is sinful, and that Christians should have no part in cremation whatsoever. These arguments that are listed up here, I actually got from a book and an article by James W. Frazier. And I appreciate Brother George recommending that book and article for me. I shouldn't say he recommended. He said, if I remember right, I haven't gone through this entirely, but this might be a place to look. Still appreciate you for that, brother. Thank you. And they gave me some serious things to think about. I think I came into this study probably somewhere between view two and view three, and I might end up there at the end too, but this person brought up some very valid arguments that we need to look at today. And I've not got these in any order, but I think the arguments build in their strength as we go along. First of all, cremation is pagan, according to those who hold to view one. As far as I can tell, the only evidence that's really given to support this idea is the practices that people use, though. Again, I don't know that you can say cremation is pagan or that it has pagan origins, because we have all the way back to biblical times, Old Testament biblical times, people being cremated. So I will say this, though. Hinduism is very unique among the world's major religions in that they demand that their people be cremated. And that should cause us pause, if nothing else, to stop and look at it. The last rite that Hindus are given, called the Antim Sanskar, is one of the 16 life rituals in their process. And there are two other faiths that are tied into Hinduism that also prefer cremation, but Hinduism is the only one that really demands it. They believe in the god Agni or Agni, I don't know how to pronounce that, who is a god of fire and seen as the link between this life and the next. So they literally present their own bodies as offerings to this god so that he can be pleased with them through fire. Second, today, cremation is thought to be an aid to a crime. I didn't like this argument too well. I didn't think it was very strong, so I'm not going to talk about it very much. But the idea behind this is that since cremation is illegal within the first 48 hours in instances of strange death, that if you're cremating people and encouraging others to be cremated, then you're aiding people in getting away with crimes. So that's that view presented, and we'll just move on to the next. Cremation is a barbarous act. I can't really disagree with that. Thinking about your loved one, I think you really have to separate their spirit from their physical body in order to do what is done to a cremated body. That being said, I don't think embalming is much better. When we bury somebody and when we embalm them, that's a rough process to put the body through. And I'm not saying this to offend anybody. If you have embalmed a loved one, my father was embalmed, and that was a choice that we made, and I still think, wow, what did they do? So whatever the treatment is of the body, I think it is something to be considered. We don't see, in all the verses that we read, we don't see a lack of care for the individuals after they pass from death. We see nothing but care from the good Christian and Israelite people that were thought to be God's people. So, yeah, our bodies that are occupied here are only shells. They're temporary here. No matter how our bodies are broken apart, they will be pieced back together by God. However, this act truly destroys what was once a shell. I think natural decomposition gives the same result, whether we cremate somebody or not. You're going to be reduced to elements, but to send that body that we've occupied for our entire life through 1,500 to 2,000 degree heat and to have our bones ground down into powder, that's, I would say, nothing short of barbarous. Almost no care for remains are shown when you describe it in that sort of way. And it seemed it would oppose the sentiment that we see throughout the scriptures for the dead. Now, this being said, in our introduction, I did explain there were some Eastern religions that cremated and cared lovingly for those individuals that they decided to cremate. So we'll get to that and to the defense on that in viewpoint three. But cremation can be considered a barbarous act. This author also said that cremation is the cheapest way to discharge a sacred duty. In passages that we've read, there is absolute care shown for a loved one, and cheap didn't really make a difference to Abraham when he got swindled out of his money for beloved Sarah. Cheap didn't cut it for the body of Jesus when Joseph of Arimathea took him off the cross and cared for him and gave him a brand new tomb that had not been occupied. So cheap wasn't really a major consideration of the individuals that we read about in the scriptures, and we ought to ask ourselves if it's something that we should be paying attention to, if it's something that we should consider today. Cremation destroys the memory of our beloved. 2 Timothy 3:3 is talking about what the world will come to and eventually will come to. And I think we're at it or past it today anyways, but in our perilous future, there will be those without natural affection. Simply, this just means you don't have a normal or a natural love or care for things that you should. Is cremation something that lacks that affection? Is it natural to care and love for a person all their life and then to send their body into fire and flame? Most would say the answer to this question at best sends us to our conclusion that cremation is questionable. Cremation is also counted by this author as a supreme dishonor to a redeemed body. And he references 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, teaching that our bodies are not ours, but God's. And how do we pay honor to God's creation? By cremating. So cremation is also contrary to the example and the teaching of Jesus and the apostles. And one thing that this author did that I'm not a fan of, but if you're going to stand behind this argument, I think you have to hold to this a little bit. And that's the idea that there is an example and a precedent set for us throughout the scriptures of burial. I believe that burial was the custom, but to those who hold this position, they would not hold that it's just a custom, but the practice of Christians and Israelites in a pagan society. Although there's no specific verse calling cremation wrong, there are plenty of verses that indicate that Jews and Christians practice burial or entombment instead of cremation. There's also a sense of high regard for the remains of the individuals that we read about. So those examples are binding examples to us, is what some folks will say who hold this position. Finally, cremation is anti-biblical. Its absence in the scriptures could be one of the most condemnable offenses to people who hold this view. And cremation was a practice in the Old Testament, as evidenced by those who cremated the remains of King Saul and Jonathan in 1 Samuel 31. And that happening, when it did, combined with the lack of practice that we see throughout all of the scriptures, sort of point to the idea that they didn't cremate people, even though they knew it was one way to take care of human remains. That's pretty much my summary on view one. I'm skipping ahead a little bit for time's sake, but as we move into view two here, I want to tell you, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on view two either, because I think view two is an absolutely beautiful view. I love view two because, for one simple reason. View two takes the best of both of those arguments and stands back and lets view three and view one just argue it out. And they say, you know what? You got a good point there. You know what? You got a good point there. They don't have to compromise anything. They can just accept that both viewpoints are very valid, and they can rest with themselves knowing that they're not going to partake in this act nor endorse it. So there's no one really harmed. View two is a balance of view one and three, taking the positives from each. And this view refrains from condemning cremation while not condoning the process either. Rather than give all the defenses for view two here, I'm going to give the defenses in view three. And I'll just talk about this simple concept that's placed forward in 1 Corinthians 10 and both Romans 14. The idea that all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. Eat whatsoever is sold in the meat market, asking no questions for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness. Whether or not cremation is a liberty, I guess is up for us to decide later. But that's sort of the view that view two, that's sort of the stand that view two holds. Proponents of this view conclude that while the scriptures don't condemn the practice of cremation, there's enough scriptural evidence to cause us to pause and refrain from yielding that cremation could be all right for the Christian. So while this view is likely to be very popular among our group, it'll probably receive the least attention today because it's, again, taking the best of both of those viewpoints. Any defense made for cremation or against it will be upheld and applauded by those who hold the view too. It doesn't matter if you're arguing one way or the other, you're going to get view two on your side. Finally today, view three. That's the idea that cremation, it can be Christian. This third and final viewpoint, I think that cremation is not sinful, being a defense for an action, I think it's important to first show why people are motivated to take this view. Wayne Jackson has a commentary that I want to reference on this subject. He says, if one chooses a full funeral with a viewing of the body along with subsequent interment, these services can be involved. Removal of the remains from home or hospital, embalming, professional charges, preparation, cosmetology, hair, etc., visitation charges, use of the funeral chapel, fees for hearse, flower van, family limo, program cards, casket, vault, opening, closing, grave fees, headstone, perpetual grave care. You can see how this gets so expensive. If they're charging $1,000 or several hundred dollars for each of these things, it gets really expensive. He also adds, in 1997, a nationwide survey was done of funeral expenses. The average cost of a full funeral was $5,543. That was the average cost of a funeral in 1997. In some places, it's not difficult to spend $10,000 or even more for a funeral. Some caskets cost more than $6,000 just by themselves. Continuing Wayne Jackson's thought here, he says, one may want to ask, therefore, is an expensive funeral the wisest course for a Christian who believes in the principle of good stewardship? Personally, I would rather leave whatever meager resources I have remaining to be used for the accomplishment of good to the glory of God than to deposit them in a hole in the ground. That not only is humorous and well said, but I think he makes an excellent point. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 and 20 is the next passage that we have to address when we look at view 3. Again, we'll read that quickly. It says, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own, for you are bought at a price? Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. I don't think this verse means what a lot of people are thinking it means. But since this was presented as one of the ideas that was put forward, I do think it is worthy of being addressed. Although there's a distinction between body and spirit in these passages, one that holds to this viewpoint in view one has to contend that the body and the spirit are still one for it to mean anything, I believe. Contextually, this passage has no bearing on our subject, really. The passage is dealing directly with the conduct of the living individual who has power over their body to control it. So I don't think this verse is a very good argument to defend the first position for many reasons. But if for nothing else, this is dealing with living human people that need to control their bodies. Second today, since we have the example of Lazarus and Jesus being buried Some folks have said that these verses require an answer. And I want to say this very carefully. George wrote an article on the subject of when an example is binding. Now, I'm not saying that George is going to agree with view three at all. Please don't mistake what I'm saying. I am saying that the examples that are listed as supposed binding examples to support view one cannot be based on what George has taught us in his tract on when an example is binding. Yes, Jesus was buried, if you will. He was placed into a tomb. Yes, Lazarus was placed into a tomb. And yes, Abraham and all the patriarchs were buried in that cave at Machpelah. But when you look at this list of binding examples that George listed for us, several of those things are violated. You have no command that's given in order to support the idea that a binding example has been given. You've got, I'm not going to go through these for time's sake. George has written a great article on that, so if you want to read that, go ahead. But just know that you can't use those circumstances as binding examples based on the rules that are set forward in this tract. You want to lay all that aside for a moment. Just forget about that section of the argument completely. Both Lazarus and Jesus were buried above ground in caves. We don't follow that procedure today. We don't put people in caves above the ground. We bury them in the ground. And yeah, there were other people buried, but a lot of people try to hang their hat on these two examples and say, well, see, this is the way it was done by the Christians and by people who followed Jesus anyways. And that's the way we ought to do it. But we don't do what they did, really. We don't put people in above ground tombs. We bury them in the ground. I don't think there are many today that would contend that either way of burial is unacceptable to God. So who are we to dictate or say that other forms of disposal of human remains is right or wrong or indifferent? There's a few objections that we still need to cover. Is cremation paganism? Any action can be performed by a pagan, and it still can be something, and the action itself can be something acceptable to God if it's not in violation of New Testament law. And I'm going to say that very carefully because I don't want to get myself into trouble with that, but things that are pagan, even pagan in origin, aren't necessarily wrong. Most of us here today wear one of these. This is pagan in its origin. The circle that our ring represents is the eternal love that we have one for another. And that started in paganism. Does it make it wrong to wear a wedding ring? I don't think so. But we can talk about that a little bit more in the question and answer session, I suppose. Pagans, some pagan religions do cremate. But many pagans out there are also buried. And no one would contend that burial is wrong because a pagan started it or a pagan did it first. So paganism is something that we need to consider, I think. But I don't know if it holds the weight that we think it ought to go ahead and cancel out what we do with cremation. Pagans pray, they sacrifice, they sing. And throughout history, nobody has called any of those things wrong. It's the direction that the worship is offered. It's the intent behind the action itself that makes something right or wrong when we consider those things. When we think about cremation, I don't think it's any different. If you're going to be cremated and you decide that you want to do that to allow your body to pass through the fire to some false god out there, you are sinning. Yeah, you're doing wrong. But if your intent is otherwise and your motives are otherwise, then who's to say that paganism is a reason that we can call it wrong? Most other objections, I think, fall in line with the mistreatment of human remains. We definitely see a care demonstrated throughout the scriptures for Christian and Israelite bodies that have had their spirits pass on. And when the body is separated from the spirit, there's no other path for the body to take except to return to dust. James 2 and 26 tells us the body without the spirit is just as dead as faith without works. So if a body has no spirit, then what is it truly? It's flesh and bones. That's what it is. It's no different than an animal or any other matter that exists here in this earth. The people left behind to witness what happens to the shell will be the only ones affected by this decision as well. And if they can tolerate that shell being rapidly brought to dust, then why stand in the way of their decision? Sometimes, I think the opposite is true. People go way too far in their honor of a cremated body. I have seen and heard of people that took the urn, the ashes of their loved one, and placed it on their mantle above their fireplace. I have heard stories of people praying to those things. You want to tell me that cremation is something that people don't do with care for their loved one? I don't think you can say that. That's a good song. I don't think you can say that. I don't think you can say that cremation shows a lack of care or concern necessarily, because all they're doing, honestly, is expediting a process that's going to happen anyways. That's the way that I've seen and looked at this from the beginning. The process is more rapid, but does it show less care? Sometimes, if people will pray to these urns and pray to these ashes, I don't think care is under consideration. You can care for your loved one in this way. You can show care for your loved one. It's not a simple thing to think about, I don't think, but neither is embalming or most of the other processes that we go through when we take care of our loved ones. And none of it's fun to think about or talk about. Ironically, I think the last point of view three that I'm going to make here is the same as verse one. The last point is the absence of such in the scriptures show cremation might be considered under liberty. And when the Bible does not give command, example, or inference on a matter, view three says that we're under liberty. And from my understanding of the scriptures, that's how things should be. Now, some might disagree with this, but I think this subject's going to be talked about at the last topic in this study, so I'm not going to touch it. I don't really want that subject at all. So, but I think where you fall on that last subject of our study is also going to help kind of determine what you think about this. Because if the Bible is silent and you believe that Bible silence is absolutely prohibitive, you're going to probably be right in there with view one. And if you think otherwise, then maybe you'll be somewhere in between, or maybe you'll still be view one. But the Bible doesn't speak to it, so you might just call it a liberty. Wayne Jackson does a fine job of summarizing the matter by saying, how one arranges a funeral for a loved one or for himself is a very personal matter. No one should presume to lay down rigid regulations to which all others are expected to conform. The scriptures do not dictate this matter. If one chooses no funeral, he has not sinned. If he wishes to provide one, that is his option. Now, I told you earlier, when I started studying this subject, I was probably somewhere in between two and three, and that's probably where I've ended up too. I don't think it's a sin to be cremated today. Some of you might. And together, in our question and answer session, if you can persuade me, I'd be all the happier. Because I don't want there to be any contention over this. I'm excited to be here and excited to partake in the study, but I was not excited to deliver on this particular topic. This was not an exciting thing, because I knew it was a very polarizing topic in which people wouldn't just have an opinion about, but people would literally be upset. If you're going to tell somebody in this room that cremation is a sin, you might be telling them that their loved one is in hell right now, when they don't believe that. And if you're going to go the other way around and say, if you're saying that cremation is okay, you're sending all these people to hell. So I understand that this is a very difficult subject. And like I said, I was not excited to get in here and talk about this, but I'm thankful again for the privilege to do it. And I wonder if we've ever considered, as we close today, the response to the question, if there is sin when someone's cremated, who is it that gets the sin? Have you ever stopped to think about that? Because really, once our spirit departs our body, isn't our field, fate sealed? Are we now saying that sin can come after the grave somehow? You see, that just doesn't make sense. Can an individual simply sin by intending to be cremated? Maybe. Or is the sin laid at the feet of those who improperly dispose of the body? All those things are questions that we're going to consider in the Q&A. And if someone believes that cremation is sinful, though, whether the Bible condemns it or not, our consciences have to be clear. And if you decide that cremation is okay for you today or okay for your family, you better not have a single doubt about it. Because if you go to the grave thinking, I don't know if this is right or not, and you do it anyways, you've probably done wrong just because you didn't know if what you were doing was right or wrong anyway. So have confidence in your decision today. If you decide that you're going to be in the camp of view three, you better have confidence that is the absolute right thing to do. I've got some recommended reading on the board for us. If you want to write that down, you're welcome to any of that stuff. That there's a couple online things, and there was a lot more that I could have referenced, but I'm well out of time today. So I thank you for your time and your attention, and we'll go ahead and open it up now.